Welcome, everybody, to the latest Lone Wolves podcast, made possible thanks to SI.com and Fan Nation. I am the Doc, John Macaroon. Christian's back again this week to recap all of the events that happened over the course of the last 3 days with the NFL draft. Boy, it came and went. The spectacle that was the NFL draft downtown, breaking the NFL record for attendance. Over 750,000 patrons visited downtown Detroit over the course of 3 days. It was spectacular. It was a fun time. We covered it wall to wall at SI.com and Fan Nation. It was wild. It was a great situation all the way through. Fans enjoyed it. Detroit, I think, was really highlighted in the best possible way. And now, six picks that we can break down. Christian, I'm curious, just to start, overall, your reaction to the Lions draft, because most people, pundits locally and nationally, are really reviewing the Lions draft favorably and are really thinking, you know what, Brad Holmes, again, found the right mix of adding talent, but also adding a couple of players that can develop for the future.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's hard not to agree with them at first glance. You know, these are guys that I liked a lot personally. And it's not hard to see their fit either. So it'll be exciting to break it down, and I can't wait to see them in action, and we'll see what it looks like when they get on the field. But at the same time, right now, one day after the event, it's hard not to like what they've done.
Yeah, it's really, when you look at it, the plan was to really draft the best player available. And you looked at it going into the draft, the Lions needed to upgrade the cornerbacks room and the offensive line. Now, of course, it just so happened that the best players available that fell to the Lions were players that also played defensive back and offensive line. What a coincidence. But for the Detroit Lions, look, it started off and many people were wondering, okay, I think that it was fair to assume that Dan Campbell, during his radio interview, he sent a smokescreen. He's like, if our guy's not there, we're going to trade down. All too well knowing that they were probably very much heavily interested in Terrion Arnold and maybe even a couple other edge rushers. But as the first round developed, I think the Lions, like everybody else, were shocked that the first 14 players were offensive players. And it really opened things up later on in the first round because there were still a lot of good players like a Dallas Turner, like a Latu that was available in the middle of the first round. But in the end, the Lions decided and pulled the trigger on moving up five spots for Terrion Arnold. And really, when you look at it, Christian, it just couldn't have gone any better for the Lions. The top cornerback on the board available. Yeah, they did give up capital, but they got a guy that they believe can come in, compete right away, and be a contributor for this defense. It's an upgrade over what you had. And so most people are looking at that Terrion Arnold pick and saying, kudos to the Lions. They added really a solid defensive player that can make an impact sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no doubt. And like you said, it was really interesting that the first handful of picks were all offensive guys. And I think that played into the Lions' favor quite a bit. Terrion Arnold, in my opinion, is a huge steal at the 24th overall pick. And, you know, kind of watching the draft unfold, once it got past that 15, 16, you start to wonder, when is Brad Holmes going to get on the phone and go up and get his guy? And, you know, you wonder, the first corner didn't go till 22 with Quinyon Mitchell, right? So it was really interesting to watch it all play out, watch it all unfold. But at the same time, to me, it wasn't super surprising because it is an offensive league now, and teams want all these playmakers to go downfield and have big plays. And the Lions kind of got ahead of that last year by taking Jahmyr Gibbs. So now they were able to focus on defense and get their guys. And their first two picks, I think they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that too, because day two rolls around and Brad Holmes and the Lions do something that not a lot of people, maybe not a lot of teams, would go and try and execute. But I do want to ask you this. You know, everyone talks about Terrion Arnold and what he can do. What does he bring to the table? You did extensive scouting. You've looked at it. Yep. You obviously, in your piece for All Lions, you posted and said that he was a player amongst the list of guys that the Lions would consider trading up for. Why? What does he bring to the table? What kind of skills does he have? And what are the Lions getting in Terrion Arnold?
Well, you know, I think Brad Holmes said it best. He fits like a glove in every way. It's that physical mindset. It's that toughness. It's that, you know, he gets out there on the corner. He is not scared to mix it up, go out there and play in the run game, which is huge, right? We've heard Dan Campbell. We've heard Aaron Glenn. We've heard all the Lions want to talk about guys who want to tackle at the cornerback position, because that's hard to find nowadays, right? Everybody wants to be a cover corner and go out there and get interceptions and things like that. But Terrion Arnold is not afraid to get in there and mix it up in the run game, go up there, set the edge, come down and make a tackle, right? And be a big hitter out there on the edge. So he fits everything the Lions are looking for, and he's just a darn good player too. I wrote it in my depth chart prediction. I expect him to compete for a starting job right away, you know, which is kind of a luxury that the Lions have, having added Carlton Davis and Amik Robertson. He doesn't have to play right away. I think that's part of what went wrong when they brought in Jeff Okuda all those years ago, was there was just so much pressure on him to have to play and play well right away. That's not an issue right now with the Lions because of the depth they have. And as a result, they can kind of ease Arnold along. But with that said, I think he's talented enough to play right away.
I do too. And you see his abilities. You see the, you know, the opportunity that he had to play at Alabama, you know, didn't come in right away and start, learned under Nick Saban and that defense. And really, alongside Kool-Aid McKinstry, was a defensive back that really got better and started to show that, okay, this is an NFL caliber player. I think he's going to fit right in. You see his physical, he's got the right mentality. And boy, talk about what an introductory press conference, what an introduction to Detroit, coming out there saying, welcome, I'm home, in front of a sea of 275,000 people or so. And then for him to talk about his goal, his personal goal, obviously outside of team goals, is to, you know, one day don the yellow jacket and be a Hall of Famer. Wow, that's supremely setting his standards very high. And I think that he's got that, having played for Nick Saban, a coach that teaches players how to handle the adverse, you know, what happens in the NFL in terms of how you get coached. He wants to be coached hard. And I just think that for the Detroit Lions, what a perfect fit. I think that, you know, clearly the Lions did want to choose players that did visit and had top 30 visits. You've seen a plethora of their draft picks were individuals that did come in, did have meetings with the Lions. But I will say this, if there was somebody else, you know, it did kind of work out where Dallas Turner did fall. But you look at his film, and yes, he is a prime edge rusher, but, you know, had some weaknesses in the run blocking, or, you know, looking at his consistency. Look, he can run block. Yeah. He's an all-around good player, but more of his weaknesses kind of stemmed from his run blocking prowess as opposed to his pass rushing. And so that's why you saw maybe the Lions decide not to look in that direction. I know you felt that Latu was going to be the premier pick. You saw the Colts video afterwards where the general manager's like, we just got the best pass rusher in the draft. And it would have taken him maybe a little bit to get up there. Was there anybody that you felt, you know what, they maybe didn't even need to trade capital? They could have just maybe considered staying at 29 and taking somebody. If you were just to say, okay, somebody else that maybe the Lions could have considered at that spot, who would that have been?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because hindsight is always 20/20, right? So you're always able to kind of sit back after the fact and wonder about it. And I did think that if Darius Robinson would have gotten to 29, that would have been a perfect fit as well, being a hometown pick and things like that. I like Darius Robinson a lot, but he ended up going at 27. But also one that I thought or had in mind was Braden Fisk, who ended up, I believe, going 39 to the Rams. The Rams traded up to get him. He was another one who I had a little bit higher than some of the other people, just because of how athletic he is on the inside. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Aleem McNeil in that aspect, obviously with what Aleem McNeil did with his diet and his training regimen last offseason, became a much better athlete and was able to stay on the field for three downs a lot of the time and also move around the defensive front. So I thought guys like that would have been nice fits, but I think in the end, this was a perfect scenario for the Lions because they didn't have to give up too much to go get Terrion Arnold. And, you know, he fell right into that range where you could move up and go get him. And that was really the ideal scenario for the Lions.
Yeah. Now we go to day two, after a wild day one, recapping everything that went down, seeing how some of the, you know, the surprise move that the Falcons made, it was a wild first round. It got kicked off pretty, after the first four picks or so, it was pretty chalk. And then once the Falcons turned to pick, that was wild in the decision that yeah. they made to, you know, upset the apple cart and bringing in, you know, Penix, and when they already invested heavily in a quarterback, that just kind of set the tone where everybody was sitting there going, whoa, what are the Falcons doing? And so now you move on to day two in the second round. And I believe the only spot where the Lions picked that was actually their pick was the 61st pick, and they stay and they take to many people's surprise, Ennis Rakestraw, another cornerback. Now, this is a name that everybody was talking about in the pre-draft process. A lot of involvement with Rakestraw in mock drafts. You saw that he was an individual that was certainly high on the Lions board. You saw his capabilities. You've seen the way in which he can compete and play at a high level. But it is a little bit surprising to go corner with back-to-back picks. Was that the right strategy? Do you feel like at that spot, you know, looking at it in the second round, a little bit later on near the end, that was the right strategy? I just think that you look at it and you say, you know what? If you believe that Ennis Rakestraw is the player that can also contribute, and Brad Holmes said after the fact, he said, we now have young developing players at the cornerback spot where, hey, if a Carlton Davis only stays 1 year, we have two guys that are competing, and that just ups your odds of at least landing one that can be an NFL starter. And I think that with the combination of Terrion Arnold and Ennis Rakestraw competing against each other and trying to earn playing time, you might have your, you know, two cornerbacks that are starters for the future, for the foreseeable future. I thought it was after the fact, you know, after the shock wore off, I thought, you know what, it's a good strategy. You don't have, you know, a lot of young cornerbacks that you can count on and be considered, that are considered high end and guys that can make an impact. So I like the pick. I like the fact that Ennis Rakestraw is on the Lions roster. I think that he's going to add depth. He's going to be someone that's going to compete for a starter's job. I think the combination of him and Terrion Arnold on this roster, boy, when you look at it and you see now the depth chart, when you go check it out at All Lions, man, that looks pretty good when you have Ennis Rakestraw and Terrion Arnold competing pretty early on to play in Aaron Glenn's defense.
Yeah, no doubt. I assumed the Lions would try to double up at one of these positions. I figured at some point they would try to take a second corner, but I thought it would be a little bit later, maybe a more developmental guy that they could kind of ease along slowly. But with that said, you know, if your strategy is to double up, why not go get another really good player? And that's what they did with Ennis Rakestraw. So it'll be interesting to see how the two of them kind of develop and at what pace the Lions choose to bring both of these guys along. Obviously, the knock on Rakestraw is that he's smaller. But at the same time, another guy that's super physical, another guy that's not afraid to mix it up in the run game, and there will be packages for him as a result on that defense. It's just a matter of how far along you can get him in year one. And like I mentioned with Arnold, there's no pressure on him to play right away because you've got two NFL starters in Davis and Robertson who are both ready to go, right? And they've played big-time snaps at the NFL level already. So with Rakestraw, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he develops and how he comes along. But at the same time, Ennis Rakestraw, very good player. Lions went 2 for 2 in my aspect.
Yeah, I think many people looked at it at first, like, okay, you see that, you know, they're taking the same position. But Brad Holmes has done this. He took, you know, with the Rams, there were opportunities that you saw that the Rams are willing to target players at areas of strength as long as the player fits and is the best player available. And I do believe that at that time, Ennis Rakestraw was probably the best defensive player on the board for the Lions at that time. So the Lions are not, you know, I know maybe it sounds like a coincidence, but I think the way the board fell for them, that there was an opportunity for them to get another player that was talented, that was probably high on their board at that position. And you definitely make the argument that, hey, even though it is, you know, targeting another position you already drafted, you need it. You are overhauling, and everybody clearly understood that last year the secondary was a major weakness. And you did go out and get a couple of veterans, but at the same time, that also gives the Lions flexibility in that, hey, these two young guys can develop too, while, the like you said earlier, the veterans go out there and maybe to start the year, handle business. And it gives the Lions, and Brett Holmes said it, flexibility. Maybe one of them can move inside at times when needed, and that can kick back Brian Branch at safety. And so it just gives Aaron Glenn a lot more options to move the chess pieces around when needed at different spots. So I do think there's an opportunity for one of them, maybe Rakestraw, because he is a little bit smaller, to play on the inside in the slot. And that can also spell Brian Branch. And it gives Amik Robertson an opportunity as well to get a spell out there if there's opportunities, or it allows the Lions to mix and match based on the opponent at hand. So I can't complain too much about that pick. Most people reviewed it favorably. Now we get to the part where Brad Holmes was interesting on day two, said he woke up feeling aggressive, but ended up not being aggressive. Then on day three, he said, well, I wasn't kind of feeling it so much, But then you see on day three, multiple trades, and it was wild because, you know, obviously covering it, being down there, you're like, whoa, the potential for the Lions to have their last pick at 61 and then not to pick again until 160s, that's 100 picks. But most people, when you saw Brad Holmes' day two media session and they asked about kind of having 100 spots, he kind of chuckled. And I think everybody knew that, yeah, there's no doubt that he's not going to wait 100 picks before he moves up. And pretty quickly you realize, okay, he made a move. But I think the pick that surprised everybody, that's the one that probably will debate the most, is Giovanni Manu from Canada, the University of British Columbia. You actually targeted him later on. And I think that's where maybe some perceptions are starting to emerge that maybe it was a reach because Brad Holmes decided to trade up. Maybe he could have been there later on in the draft, but Brad Holmes has showed, and it's not a surprise, if there's a player that they believe is somebody they want, they go up and get them, and they don't care where it is. You saw with Broderick Martin in last year. So I'm curious, too, because it's something we will talk about, but in regards to drafting developmental players, which the Lions seem comfortable doing at this stage of their rebuild, what did you make of that? And obviously, you targeted him as a player that the Lions could target on day two. What did you like about him? And how surprised are you that at that high of a draft pick, the Lions took a player that didn't play against really high quality opponents? And even though he's 6'7" and a massive individual, yes, he has supreme athleticism. Yes, he can be a developmental target. What do you make of the Lions choosing a player that maybe for a year or two doesn't have to see the field?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I kind of came across him a little bit later in the process. You start to see some of these posts that come out about, oh, check out this Canadian offensive tackle who has unbelievable, you know, intangibles and has a 30 whatever inch vertical, right? And it just kind of catches your eye at first, like, oh, wow. And then you start to dig into it a little bit and you're like, well, you know, there's something there. Because at the end of the day, you cannot teach his size. But you can teach technique and you can teach skill and you can develop this guy into a good football player, right? So with Manu, it is all about what can you teach him and how can you develop him, because a lot of the traits and the intangibles are already there. So for the Lions, it's just about how quickly can you bring him along. And the good news is he's an offensive tackle and you've got two really solid offensive tackles right now. So there is no pressure to play him right away. But with that said, injuries happen. Right. We've seen it with the Lions the last handful of years. The offensive line at some point is going to get banged up. That's just the nature of the position with the physicality and all that. And at some point, you may have to ask him to play some meaningful snaps. But at the same time, you've got Dan Skipper to be that swing tackle. You've got some flexibility with some other guys, some push and pull. Like Kobe Sorzol was a tackle in college, moved him to guard, can probably still play a little bit of tackle. So it'll be interesting to see how they put it all together. But at the same time, there's a lot to like about what Manu offers from an intangible perspective. And I do think with kind of how much buzz he picked up, even if it's just on social media, right? He's got a bunch of eyes on him. He was a target to go a lot earlier than initially expected, just because a lot of teams see this, right? So I don't necessarily fault Brad Holmes for trying to make that move and go up and get him that early, because at the end of the day, you never know how much longer he was going to be out there. And we're not privy to these conversations with other teams, right? We don't know what other teams' boards look like. So, hey, you can't really fault it that much.
Yeah, but at the same token, too, for those that say, man, it's a reach. That's a player that maybe you could have gotten in another round, that you need, you know, an elite pass rusher. You need maybe potentially a player that you could add to this roster that can compete to be a starter right now. Kind of a win now team. So for those that are looking at Manu as a reach, as somebody that is, you know, obviously clearly a player that they want to develop, but also didn't play against the toughest competition, that you're projecting 2-3 years down the road. And can the Lions afford to take developmental players? I mean, look, to play devil's advocate, I think the pick is great. You see his athleticism. I think that this the testament and the reason why the Lions are willing to do it is because they have a good roster. They have an offensive line that is really stout with laden with veterans. You have also Kobe Sorzol that they brought in last year from the draft, and they have veterans that are all over that offensive line. So there's a healthy mix there. But at the same token, you understand that there's still room for adding talent that projects in 2 or 3 years that potentially now you have an offensive lineman that can play for a decade. If you see the skill set, I can understand if you see the intangibles, but at the same token, I can also understand that, hey, you know, there's opportunities down the road in future drafts to target individuals that aren't going to be on your roster, because right now the main goal for 2024 is to win the Super Bowl, not to get there, not to repeat as NFC finalist. It's to be able to get to the Super Bowl and win it. And so adding Manu doesn't really help because you don't project that he's going to see the field all that much in 2024. Do you think that the strategy to add players that are developmental, like a Broderick Martin, like a Manu, is a strategy that potentially could come back to haunt the Detroit Lions?
Yeah. I mean, if they don't pan out, it's absolutely going to haunt the Lions, right? Because if they don't get to that desired level of success, then it's just going to be looked at as a wash and a waste of a pick, which is how this thing kind of works. But at the same time, I think what the Lions are trying to do is set themselves up for future success as well and make it sustainable, so that if they can't agree to a contract with Taylor Decker, right, or if they can only give him a 1 or 2 year extension, they've got a succession plan. Whether that's move Penei Sewell to left and then have Manu play the right side, or develop Manu to be the blindside guy for the next handful of years. I think that's what they're trying to do, and we can get into that with some of the other guys down the line. But I think the plan for Manu would obviously be a developed guy, and you kind of stash him a little bit for the first year or two, and then you see what he's got, right? And let him earn a spot as far as being a starter, and let him show in training camp that he's better than Taylor Decker. And if he's not, then you just ride it out with Taylor Decker, who's a heck of a player anyway. So, the Lions, I think, with this pick, are just trying to give themselves a lot of options as far as the offensive line goes, because they do have one of the best offensive lines in the league, and they're trying to make that sustainable.
Yeah, and one of the picks that I liked was Sione Vaki. Obviously, clearly, everybody understood that this was a player they were targeting. All the reports were there, obviously did the visits, obviously was a name that was on a lot of mock drafts. So this is a player that clearly many people understood could be a Lion because of the fact that Kirby Joseph was listed as somebody that had surgery and is not going to be available at the safety spot. But when he was drafted, it was revealed afterwards that in all the pre-draft work that he did with the Lions, the talk was that he had conversations with Ben Johnson, Scotty Montgomery. So his understanding is that he's going to play running back and he's going to join this offense. And so you look at it and you say, okay, this is a versatile player that can do some things on special teams if he doesn't start right away. Obviously, clearly, knowing that he's got to compete against Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, Craig Reynolds. But you have an option in a guy that I think Brad Holmes saw the film and having conversations with Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson's probably like, I can do a lot with this in the passing game. I can have options against different matchups to loosen things up. And should something happen to Jahmyr Gibbs where he's got to miss a game or has a situation where he needs a spell, Vaki, I think, can have more of an immediate impact than people think. I like this pick. I know some people are wondering why Brad Holmes made an investment in being aggressive. I like this pick. When you see the film, when you see the average yards per reception, you see the speed, you see the way that he played at Utah, go and watch some of the highlights. Very impressive player, and I think a great addition for the offense in that at that spot at 132, I think they felt like, you know what, we can add this piece to the offense knowing that, hey, we got some wide receivers that are still developing and we got, you know, some competition now with Bam Knight and Vaki on this roster. I think that, boy, that bodes well, and it'll be a good competition in training camp to see who comes out of it. But it's a nice young running backs group that really has the opportunity to develop and execute at a high level. I like the pick. I know that some of the noise was out there for the Manu and Vaki picks, but I think that Brett Holmes really, really did himself well in the scouting department by adding this this former Utah player to the roster.
Yeah, it's not hard to see the vision with him, right? Especially after hearing Brad Holmes talk and the way he talked about Vaki when he's got the ball in his hands, right? And the fact that he wasn't even a running back in college, he just played there out of necessity. I think with him, it's all about, can we tap into that potential? Can we make the most of that? I expect he's going to play a lot on special teams early. I still don't even think he gets by Craig Reynolds in terms of the depth chart, just because Reynolds has such a sound understanding of the protections and things like that. But there's a place for him for sure, whether that's just a change of pace or a secondary option. But I would say that normally he's just going to be a special teamer in year one. He was probably the one that I viewed the most as a reach. But it just remains remains to be seen what happens with him.
Okay. Why did you view Vaki as a reach at that spot? Was there somebody else you could think at that position that the Lions could have maybe targeted differently if they wanted to go in a different direction?
You know, I just think with him, the part that I was kind of confused on is the fact that they had him listed as a running back to begin with. You know, he's a fit at safety, right? You mentioned it with Kirby Joseph being out till training camp. Like, they need bodies back there. It's Ife Melifonwu, it's Brandon Joseph, and then it's maybe Brian Branch, and that's really it. But again, maybe they have a something in mind with one of these corners they drafted. But yeah, they just need bodies back there. And so for me, I just was thinking maybe they would go safety around that time. And then when I saw the Vaki pick come across, I was like, oh, here we go. And they announced him as a running back. And I was like, oh. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for sure. And I'm sure that if the Lions run into some trouble back there, he could maybe see some time at safety as well.
Yeah. You look at it and you see the opportunities that that Brad Holmes wants to give for these young draft prospects. And yeah, if you have a guy that can also do a couple of different things, I think special teams might have been the calling there. Many believe that he was one of the special teamers that could come in and contribute. And you know how much the Lions enjoy drafting and developing guys that can do a lot of different things. And they value special teams, I think, more than a lot of NFL teams do. So Vaki can come in and see the field. He could be the returner that everybody thinks is, whoa, special, especially with the new, you know, the different kickoff rules. Maybe you have an opportunity there to, you know, use his skill set early on. Now you go to 189 and learning about Mekhi Wingo. I'm very impressed with what the Lions were able to do. One of my favorite picks that the Lions did make. Can you look at it early on? You say, wow, what a leader, clearly leading the LSU Tigers. And you see the intangibles. Obviously, having dealt with injury, he fought back to play in the bowl game. And I think that was highlighted when he was drafted in his first talk with Detroit media. You see a guy that, you know, has the ability to galvanize a room, is a leader, wore number 18 at LSU, which signals, hey, you're a captain. You're somebody that embodies leadership and is somebody that people will look to and respect. And then you turn on the film, and this guy can be an interior pass rusher, aggressive bulldog. Now, we're not going to make the Aaron Donald comparison, but we will start off by saying that he is a little bit undersized, but clearly if somebody puts in the work, you can overcome that. And he was asked about it, like, hey, how do you, you know, kind of, you know, how have you been successful despite the fact that you're a little bit undersized? And it's just all about, hey, when, and it's actually really interesting. You know, clearly there are those that have the natural talent, that have the size, speed, and just need fine tuning of fundamentals. But when you're undersized, it kind of actually forces you to be a better football player, forces you at that spot, if you're a defensive lineman, to understand hand placement, position, gap responsibility, understanding where you need to win with leverage and force and different pass rush moves. It forces you to be creative in your abilities to switch up your pass rush moves. If you try one move this way and an lineman gets it, you have to try multiple moves because you're at a disadvantage with the sheer size that you're going up against with these more athletic offensive linemen. But you saw on film, this guy was crafty. He was able to get to the quarterback. He's leader at LSU. I like the pick. I like the fact that 189, you went out there and potentially you give yourself an option. Now, we're not going to throw it out there. I do believe Ali McNeil will be part of the future, but you do have to, just in case another NFL team wants to show Aleem a lot more love than the Lions, and you say, okay, you know what? We have a guy in Wingo that can step in and fulfill that role should Aleem McNeil move on. If you just decide, hey, Jared Goff and Aiden Hutchinson and Jameson Williams and all the players and Jack Campbell, all these guys you got to pay down the road. If Aleem McNeil is the guy that unfortunately has to go, then you have an option. I think this pick clearly highlights that, hey, solid player, can learn from the defensive line room, and I think has the potential, along with, you know, it starts to sound intriguing in a couple of years when we fire up the microphone and it's Broderick Martin alongside Mekhi Wingo. That has a chance to kind of complement. I think this is kind of a complement to having another big stout run to defender. You have now Mekhi Wingo that's a little bit more athletic and shifty. I like the pick. There's a lot of positives to like about that pick.
Yeah, I think you nailed a lot of good points there. With Wingo, I was just shocked how far he fell. You know, I figured he was a day two guy, So for him to get into the sixth round and the Lions be in a position to go up and get him, I think that was huge. And I, like you said, I really like the fit here, and I think he's going to be a good player for the Lions. I expect him to maybe be a more developmental rotation kind of guy. But in the end, I think the Lions got a really big steal here.
Yeah, they did. And I think you realize, okay, Brad Holmes targets players that play at the highest level in the SEC, and you got to respect that. Mm-hmm. You recognize, all right, look, he's looking at LSU, looking at Alabama, looking at individuals that are playing, you know, high level SEC football. Can't complain too much. And hey, look, every general manager has his targets. They find guys that they like, and he finds that, hey, scouting the SECs, you can't really go wrong there. So I think that Mekhi Wingo is going to be a player that many people are going to respect and find that is going to be, hey, become a fan favorite, you know, sooner rather than later. So now we get to the final pick, and I just think that many people, when they see the video of him scoring a touchdown and doing the keg stand in the end zone, was really putting a smile on a lot of people's faces. But I love the description that the Lions used, that Brad Holmes used to describe lineman Christian Mahogany. He just is a road grader, a dirt bag. And what that means is this guy is wanting to really compete at the highest level against defensive linemen, wants to put them on their ass, pancake them, and be able to push people around and play physical, play violent. This is the guy that is going to relish blocking and be somebody that is going to relish protecting the quarterback and not letting opposing defensive linemen get through the crease, get through the gaps there. I love the pick. You turn his film on, stout, athletic, good hands. And I think that another guy that I think now coming to Detroit in this system, I think this guy can be a future offensive lineman in this league for a long time. So you recognize, you know what, that on day three, they target offensive line and they address the need along the defensive line. So it completes a draft, in my mind, that is really, really solid. What were your thoughts on Christian Mahogany? I think that, you know, many people recognize, okay, the players later on are going to need some time to develop and they got to battle early on. But man, Mahogany, I think, can do a lot of different things. And he represents, when you see the scouting reports on everything that he can do, represents what the Lions are looking for at that spot.
Yeah, I like the Mahogany pick a lot. He's another guy that's going to be maybe a more developmental guy, but at the same time, he also slid a bunch too, just like Wingo did. So for him to be there in the sixth round, you might as well take him, right? So the Lions will see what they have with him. And, you know, at the end of the day, if he's just a rotational guard, then that's good value for a sixth round pick. But I also think he's got starter upside and could be a piece for the Lions for a really long time.
Yeah, no doubt. And so you look at it. Yeah, he was ranked number 99 on Dane Brugler's The Beast board. Yeah. And so in the end, when people evaluated what this draft looked like, you know, Sharp Football has it so that the Lions had the best draft in the NFL in terms of value, getting guys like a Terrion Arnold at number 24 when he was projected to be a, you know, top 15 pick, getting Rakestraw in the second round. A lot of value, even though the Lions, you know, don't believe in positional value, they did get some value based on where these guys fell. And so six picks, I think that, look, people maybe oversold or kind of overreacted to the fact that they lost one third round pick next year. They still have seven picks. They got two picks in the sixth round and they have an opportunity to move back and do things. Look, you saw, I think to me covering it, it's fun because look, in 2024, the Lions only made one pick at their spot. So Brad Holmes does not mind picking up the cell phone and making the calls. He enjoys it. He relishes it. He's developed the relationships. Obviously the deal that you could say, okay, based on the draft chart, is that they lost, you know, potentially points to the Cowboys in that first trade with Terrion Arnold. But in the end, when you have a player that you like, you gain value and you gain opportunities by moving around and making other deals. So to me, this draft is tremendous. You cannot really, of course, it takes a couple years to really fully see the fruits of the labor of the entire class. But this one kind of has the feel of like, okay, this is professional. We got the guys that we like. And if you hit on three of them, this is one of those drafts where if you just hit on, you know, let's say, for example, if one of the cornerbacks doesn't work out, if it's just Arnold or Rakestraw, you get one position there that helps you in the future. If Vaki can be somebody that is a solid role player, moves up to number three or number two, eventually down the road, that's a plus. If one of the linemen pans out, if Manu's a home run and you took a chance and he's a successful offensive lineman, your gamble pays off. Or if it's Mahogany, who the guy you think is a little bit more reliable now, turns out you got three, that's 50%. That's really doing a lot of positive for this football team. You can't argue that this team didn't get better with this draft. The Manu pick is a gamble, but hey, if you're the Lions, you can gamble a little bit. You've built up the cachet, you've built up the credibility. So I don't find it to be where I'm as upset as a lot of people, I think, get emotionally attached to these draft picks, not knowing that Brad can get it back real fast. Like, relax. Like, Brad can maneuver that board up and down. He's not taking a lot of L's in regards to the picks that he's making. And there's a lot of value. There's a lot of good opportunities for Brad Holmes to do some good things. So in my mind, I just think that Brad Holmes has done a great job to be able to stock this team with talent at a lot of different positions. So I'm happy. I'm satisfied with this draft. And I'm looking forward to a lot of positivity moving forward.
Yeah, I think overall it was a great draft class. You talk about guys like Christian Mahogany and Mekhi Wingo in the sixth round. I mean, how crazy is that? Because of where they were slotted to go. And again, these analysts, and they have these conversations, but they're not always spot on. So it's not hard to see them following maybe a round, maybe two rounds. But for both of those guys to be available in the sixth round is immense value for the Lions. And then you talk about doubling up at cornerback, right? Like I mentioned, I thought they would double up. But at the same time, to go out and get two premium guys, two of the top five guys in the class, regardless of what order different analysts, different scouts had them in, it's a consensus two of the top five. So the Lions are in a really good spot from this draft. And then you take a flyer on guys like Vaki and guys like Manu. As a whole, I think that was a pretty good class.
It was. It's something that I think most fans are excited. You see all the grades, Sports Illustrated with an A, PFF with an A. You see the discussion of Brad Holmes now. You saw him now being compared to Howie Roseman of the Eagles. I mean, that's some stellar class to be in. And you start to see kind of across the league, the talk has been now, hey, we need to take the best player available. We need to find guys that fit the system. And so what did you make of, I'm just curious, what did you make of the way in which the Lions kind of were unified? The positional villain hoodies, the Campbell 89 jerseys. It just felt like, okay, we're solidified. We're understanding, hey, we're trying to build a football team our way, and we want people to support it, and we want people to understand it. And I can understand a little bit, maybe even though he hasn't come out and said it, what positional villain means is that, potentially my opinion is it means that, hey, we want football players that are gritty, are tough, that maybe have been cast aside or told that they can't do things, or are guys that, hey, we're going to challenge and try to work on being the best that they can be. Kind of like the Lions as an organization. Hey, they're not supposed to be in the NFC title game. Hey, they're not supposed to be building this way. They're supposed to get in order, fall in line. But Brad Holmes doesn't want to do that. He doesn't care what the positional value is. They would have drafted, potentially a safety if that was the best player on the board. Now, I do think that there is opportunities to draft players at certain positions that are also talented. And I think the Lions are taking advantage of it. So I'm excited to see what this draft class looks like. We're going to see minicamp in less than 14 days with the rookies checking in. So you got a chance to hear a little bit of the press conferences from these guys. They all believe in grit, violence, playing hard. Mm-hmm. And you saw some of the great stories and listened in. So this draft class, I think, grades out to be at worst a B+, A-, and is something that I think has very much a potential for a very high ceiling and an opportunity for this football team to maintain their success moving forward.
Yeah, no doubt. I completely agree. The thing that I'm looking for is how many of these guys are ready to go right away, because like we've talked about, it's all great value. It's not hard to see the fit, but now it's about what can they do for the Lions on the field? Because like you mentioned earlier, the goal for this season for them is to win the Super Bowl. And as a result, you've got to have instant impact from some of these guys who can help fill in the holes that they have from last year. and help take them to that next level. So it's going to be a lot of fun to follow along with, and I cannot wait until we start seeing these guys out there on the field. I know it's just going to be in shells and t-shirt and shorts for the first little bit, but training camp ain't that far away, man. And you know what? With the draft in the rearview mirror, it's now all eyes full speed ahead on next year.
Yep. And then just real briefly, the undrafted free agents, I think they got the kicker that they're looking for. I know it's not impressing a lot of people based on his range. I understand. And then the wide receiver they got from Illinois, I think everybody's excited, giving him a large guarantee, maybe indicating that he's going to make the team. What'd you make of the 13, 14 guys they got on as undrafted free agents?
You know, they're all lottery tickets. It'll be fun to dig a little bit deeper into each and every one of them over the next couple of days. You know, right now it's just kind of all face value, with the exception of the guy from Illinois, Isaiah Washington. And, you know, he's going to be – Isaiah Williams. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch, I think. And then you look at a guy like James Turner, like you mentioned. You know, the range isn't super spectacular, but he hit some big kicks for the Wolverines. And it'll be fun to see what he's able to do and if he's able to beat out Michael Badgley. So, yeah, really, it's Williams and Turner. And then you've got some intriguing pieces on the defensive side as well. There's an edge rusher out of Ole Miss and then a long snapper as well, which will be fun to see some competition for Scott Daly. Hey, nobody's safe with Brad Holmes in charge. So it'll be fun to see which guys can really make strong cases to make the team.
Yeah, the draft was successful. And then Detroit, really, we got to close with this. The city showed out. Yeah, of course, every draft and every event of that magnitude is going to have some wrinkles, some things that didn't go exactly right. You know, to have the capacity to get shut down twice, to be able to, you know, no longer having fans come in, man, that just indicates the demand was so high. They couldn't fit everybody. 750,000 people. Almost doubling the attendance and more than doubling the attendance of Kansas City. It set the standard. It was so great to see the city of Detroit really highlighted in that fashion. I got to go down there. It just had the feel of something special. It was spectacular. Mm-hmm. It was fun. It was an opportunity where I got to meet a professional wrestler that was also filming content. So I had fun with it the entire time. It was a fun opportunity to get down there. And really, Christian, it's fascinating in that years past, the draft was kind of it was hyped up as the Super Bowl for the Lions, and it always kind of felt like people were disappointed that there were a lot more question marks. When you build up that level of credibility, the ability to believe that, hey, maybe Ivaki can come in and contribute right away, the belief that, you know what, maybe Giovanni Manu can come in and develop and actually do something, I think the hope that the things will turn out positively is a lot higher than it ever has been. And it makes it a lot easier to cover, a lot more rewarding and positive when people are kind of, you know, viewing things from a more positive lens. And I think that Brad Holmes has earned that. And I just don't think they need to keep kind of having all this public unified front with the positional villains and all that kind of talk and just talking more about, you know, I don't understand why. Look, there's one way of building a football team. It's just different than yours. Now you got to go out there and build your football team to win the Super Bowl. And then you can have the ultimate, I got you guys, and talk about more your philosophy. But his philosophy makes sense. Just draft football players that fit your mold. Draft good football players, no matter what position they are. But to push back just a little bit, it doesn't mean because it's not the best player on your board that maybe it's not, you know, at that position. Maybe you could find another top player that fits at a different position at a different time. So I recognize that, you know, the belief is, hey, pick the best player at the right time. But I feel like with the talent, and if you really believe in your draft and develop model with your coaches, if you get a guy at a different spot that you feel like, hey, is a more talented edge rusher, but can maybe potentially fit in and do some things, but maybe isn't as high as the cornerback, hey, you might take a chance here and there because you still have some question marks along the defensive line at the edge rusher spot, but maybe they hope that Davenport and the combination of Davenport and Houston will solve the problem. So I just think that the distance or the difference between different positions and the rankings, maybe the gap is not as big as maybe Brad Holmes would lend to believe. But hey, we'll see now moving forward what this means for this football team. Stay tuned to SI.com/Lions. For coverage, highlights, podcasts, all things talking about the Detroit Lions. This draft was positive. It was a success. Me and Christian will be here on a regular basis breaking down the news of the day, and we'll have an opportunity moving forward to evaluate each and every one of the six picks and get insights from those that covered them and those that have watched film and paid attention as well, as well as Christian and I, who are going to start digging deep into the players now that have been added to the Detroit Lions roster. Christian, thanks so much for joining and being part of the Lone Wolves podcast, breaking down all things Detroit Lions.